record reflect, it's 8:07. In attendance, we have Representative Newman, Representative Salmon, Representative Ledoux, Co-Chair Thomas, and Kurt Olson, myself. First order of business will be reopening House Bill 160.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move CSHB 160 Draft F.
No opposition. Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Chairman Olson and co-chairman both Olson and Thomas. Appreciate the opportunity to bring this back. I appreciate the first hearing. I've taken to light the constructive comments offered by members of the committee and the local governments, and to not have this, I also took to light comments of the AML director and others who said this was good, solid public policy, but work out some of the details so as not to limit local school districts' ability to communicate on their local school bonds and other local issues. And that's always been my intent as a legislator, is to focus my intent and not have unintended consequences. So we narrowed this bill to only statewide propositions. Still could be the occasional school bonds, but the last 25 years there's only been one school bond issue on the ballot, so I think that's such an infrequent event. And there was no, as I recall, during the last statewide election on school bonds, there was no shortage of advocates, from conservative to liberal, and I think we've constructively followed your directives as co-chairs and members of the committee, and the constructive suggestions by people that testified from the public and other advocacy groups to narrow the focus of this. So, I've been busy up in finance committee. I haven't been able to spend as much time. My my aide Ben Mulligan can answer any questions, probably with more accuracy and detail than I could on the cuff, if that's necessary.
Are there any questions for Representative Stoltz? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move that we move CSHB 160 version F from committee with individual recommendations.
Any opposition? It's gone. Next order of business will be House Bill 231.
Is she dancing between committees? Oh. There she comes, Peggy. Representative Wilson, excuse me.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman. And members, House Bill 231 is a human services grant, and what this bill would do would expand the definition of a qualified municipality to include a consortium of municipalities located in the same geographic region with a population that exceeds $50,000. And this would allow organizations such as Southeast Conference to form a consortium to receive program funding for social services in the region. Now, the Human Services Community Matching Grants Program is receiving about $1.2 million from the state in general funds for this coming year. Now, these Human Services Community Matching Grants, in order for communities to qualify for it, they have to meet three qualifications. One is they have to provide a 30% matching fund. They have to comply with the grant application procedures. And they have to establish a citizens advisory group to help establish priorities and with the allocations amongst the services funded. Now, currently, the qualified communities include Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Mat-Su. So there's only three communities that actually qualify at this time. I've provided a list to the community of the sub-recipients of these grants, and that's this paper right here. And that's got a list of who gets the grants in those three communities now. And there's quite a list, and as you can see by looking over this list, many valuable community services are receiving these funds. For instance, this enables Beans Cafe to serve more meals to needy people. It provides funding for an abused woman's aid in crisis. It enables the Salvation Army to better serve needy Alaskans. And it helps pay for after-school programs as well as basic services for older adults. This is all well and good, and I support these efforts. This is wonderful. However, due to distances, it is difficult, if not impossible, for residents in many miles from these largest three communities to access these important services. So it's kind of like a fairness issue. Under this bill, municipalities and boroughs located in the same geographic region with a population that exceeds $50,000 could form a consortium to qualify for these grants. And any consortium formed would be required to provide the 30% match, just like any of the other ones are, and would have to establish a citizens advisory group. Now, the accompanying fiscal note assumes that two additional geographic regions would be eligible for these funds, the first being the Gulf Coast region, and if that encompasses the Kenai Peninsula Borough, the Kodiak Island Borough, and Valdez Cordova consensus area. So that's under this bill, that area could apply, you know, get a consortium together and apply for these grants. And the other area is the Southeast region. I have given the members a print off from Southeast Conference, and that's this map right here. And that really shows you exactly all the different communities in Southeast that actually already belong to Southeast Conference. Now, if this was enacted, it is planned that Southeast Conference would assist with the formation of the required consortium. And there are 25 communities that are currently members of the Southeast Conference. And if this, as the fiscal note shows, that it would be possible if they could come up with a 30% match, that $150,000 for Southeast and $159,000 for the Gulf Coast area. And there are people in the audience that can answer some of the questions, too. But
Mr. Wilson, it's my understanding that if we include the new section with the $50,000, they would have to apply for this grant, and maybe the department can shake their head, yes or no, if I'm right or wrong, by the 1st of October, which means that the whole issue of whether or not the Finance Committee makes an inclusion of X amount of money into the pot is probably going to be moot for this year, because in my estimation, without an effective date, this bill passes May and ends up on the governor's desk sometime whenever. You got 90 days before it goes into effect, and we're already into that window almost of October, and for the groups to get together and to make a decision on what grants we want to apply and who's going to, you know, I'm just suggesting the Southeast Conference may have their work cut out in trying to put that all together in the time frame, if there is any time frame at all available, depending on when this is signed into law. I'm just suggesting maybe if this were to go forward, and if your hopes is to have this available for the Southeast or whoever else, Western region, or the Gulf Coast region, that you may want to have an immediate effective date.
I would be. Go ahead.
Yeah, Representative Cott is correct. The statute now requires municipalities to apply October 1st of the year preceding the start of the new fiscal year. And the intent, I think, of that statute was so that the legislature would know which communities had applied before they went through the appropriation process. So so typically, municipalities would apply October 1st, 2005 for the FY 2007 budget cycle, if we're talking about this year. Unless there were some transition language in the legislation or some other such thing.
I stand corrected. The amendment passed.
Okay. I don't feel so bad. My memory hasn't failed. I'm not losing as fast as I'm thinking. The brain cells are still hanging together. Mr. Chairman, then, with that, I would do a conceptual amendment that on the effective date, that it's an immediate effective date, to allow, if this were to go forward, or any other communities end up being included along the way, that they're eligible this year. For instance, the amendment we just passed would not make the Kodiak Southwest region eligible this year, in my estimation, based on the time frame that they have available and getting those groups together. I mean, this is not going to be a simple ordeal. I think they're going to have some work at them. So I've moved that we change, with the concurrence of the sponsor, that there's immediate effective date to allow those communities the opportunity.
Is there any opposition? Conceptual amendment passes.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I would again make the motion to move the bill out of committee with the understanding we recognize that this has two more committees of referral, and we have less than 30 days left in this session, and it still has the other side that we need to get through. It's going to be a tough endeavor anyways, but nonetheless, that opportunity will present itself along the way.
Any opposition? Moves out. Next up is Representative Salmon. House Bill 170.
You want me, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
You want me to get up here, or?
Who's going to testify? You or?
Whatever. I don't know. Well, my memory is failing.
She can sit up here.
I'll go back to my original comment.
That works.
That'll be okay.
That works. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Moira Smith. I'm a legislative aide to Representative Salmon. Did you want to say a few words about the bill?
And I'm Representative Woody Salmon from District 6.
Good morning.
Thank you. Anyway, I would like to say I introduce this bill, House Bill 231, or correction. I'm on the wrong page. 176. And let me get my notes here. Anyway, this bill, what this bill does is eliminate the daylight savings time between October, I think the first Sunday in October, to the first Sunday in April. It eliminates that time, so we if this bill passes, then we're stuck on the Alaska Standard Time, which is the time we're at now. We just changed, I think, last Sunday, and I think that affected a lot of people, memory-wise, and in Alaska, it seems that this bill is almost senseless. First of all, in the wintertime we have short days, in the summertime we have long days. So it's, and some people say it saves energy, and some people say it doesn't. Well, when it gets dark, we turn the lights on, and every year, whether the time is 1 hour before or 1 hour after, I mean, you know, we still have to turn the lights on. So those are some of the defense. And another item is that a couple legislature brought up to my attention is that that it would affect their time with the lower 48 in doing business. And today we have telephone, we have cell phones, we have answering machines, we have faxes, and we have email. So when you come to work in the morning, whether you're 2 hour, 4 hour, 6 hour difference, there it is on the computer or on the fax or on the answering machine. So that I think has no bearing on this change of the time. So with that, I'll leave it up to Moira Smith.
Thank you. I'll just say a few things. I presume that you've all read the sponsor statement, so I won't bore you with it. I just, three main points. First of all, in Alaska, daylight savings time is unnecessary. It's an unnecessary move that was done on a national level, originally proposed by Benjamin Franklin for a variety of reasons, but primarily to save energy. The thought was if they didn't have to burn candles and kerosene during the winter months for more hours than necessary, they would save energy. This rationale works in the lower 48 states. It doesn't work so well in Alaska because of the vast geographic expanse. The majority of the state is located in areas where that hour saved doesn't really give us daylight, and it also does not save us energy. So it doesn't have a lot of applicability in Alaska. It doesn't do us a lot of good. Second, from their sort of health and safety concerns with the introduction of daylight savings time each year and then the ending of daylight savings time each year, there's the disruption of the circadian rhythms of all of our bodies, which you may have experienced this week. I mean, I know that I feel a little bit behind this week, but it may just be the session that's doing it to me. But that disruption is real. It's been documented by psychologists and people who examine the human physiology. And they find that that disruption is particularly hurtful to teenagers and children because they have an even more difficult time getting up to speed with the change in time. And finally, as Representative Salmon pointed out, in the 21st century, business is no longer conducted primarily over the telephone. It's done by fax, it's done by email, it's done on the internet, and therefore disruption to business is really not a concern in the sense that people conduct business in many ways that is absolutely over which the time zone has no bearing. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I know there are a couple people on the line who would like to testify.
Actually, there are two people on the line. Any comments from Moira? I think we'll go to Paula Rack and Rangel.
Okay, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I would like to express my opposition to House Bill 176, which represents an elimination of daylight savings time. Although it's inconvenient to spend a few minutes twice a year changing clocks, it is not worth the inconvenience of being 2 hours off Seattle half the year. Federal Statute 15 U.S.C. 260-64 time zones was established in the United States with regard for the convenience of commerce and the existing junction points and division points of common carriers engaged in interstate commerce. The convenience of commerce has been defined to include considerations of all impacts upon a community, which include impacts on individuals, family, businesses, and other organizations. Because of our location in the Pacific Northeast, now I'm from Southeast Alaska, our commerce has historically been tied to the Seattle area, which observes Pacific time. The proposed change would mean that we would be 1 hour different from Seattle in the winter and 2 hours different in the summer. In 1983, our elected officials wanted to, quote, unify Alaska, unquote, by combining time zones. When they proposed that most of Alaska change to Alaska Standard Time, there was a loud outcry from Southeast Alaska. We were on Pacific Standard Time, Pacific Daylight Time, along with Seattle, and most residents did not want to change. Votes were held in many communities in Southern Southeast, and it was overwhelmingly shown that Southeast wanted to stay on Pacific Standard Time. Now we are being asked to swallow an additional hour away from our natural or preferred time zone for part of the year. When most of Alaska switched to one time zone, it put the farthest east and the farthest west residents on a time zone that was not natural for the rhythms of the sun for either area. It was touted as a compromise to unify the state. Unfortunately, we all find it inconvenient. I suggest that we either learn to live with this compromise or switch back to the way we were before the change in 1983. If the objection is spending a few minutes changing clocks twice a year, then we should compromise by staying on daylight savings time year-round. I personally do not find it objectionable to switch clocks. As a business owner, I find it very inconvenient to be 4 hours different from the East Coast. This change would mean that we would be 5 hours different for part of the year, and that we would have to try to remember when the rest of the country changes. Most people can't remember now without reminders, let alone to remember when we are no longer switching ourselves, when there would be no reminders. As an individual, I would sorely miss that lost hour of evening daylight. It would be greatly missed in the spring and summer, when spring and fall, when the days are shorter. Please remember that Southeast is much farther south than your districts, and our longest days are shorter than yours are. As a parent, the children would miss an hour of playtime after school. I realize that it would not make much difference to areas outside of Southeast Alaska, but the difference would be significant here. Longitudinally speaking, Southeast Alaska belongs on Pacific Standard Time. Anchorage, being farther east, belongs 2 hours away, just as it was before 1983. We are all forced to compromise into one time zone. Now, northern residents have found that inconvenient and want to essentially go back to the time zone that they were in before the compromise and take Southeast with them. Most Southeast residents do not like the present time zone either. If northern residents do not like the present situation, then change your situation and leave us alone. That's all I have to say.
Can I get you to identify yourself for the record, please?
My name is Paula Rack. I'm in Wrangell.
Are there any questions for Ms. Rack? Thank you very much. We have one question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paula, this is Representative Cott. As long as I've been around here, this issue, I think, has been around here as well. Probably a lot longer than myself. But it seems to me the big issue that has always come up has been the business aspect. And sponsors' remarks indicate that with current technology, the impact on business shouldn't be as great as it has been perhaps a decade ago, when the internet and email and all the other forms of technology were just coming into fruition. Can you just enlighten the committee on how this particular change in time would affect you as a business person? I'm not sure what business you're in or what relationship, other than you deal, it sounds like you have some relationship in dealings with those back east and would be somewhat inconvenient.
Well, even though we do have the internet and the fax, we still have to talk to people. And with the phone, you know, on the phone, and on the East Coast, if there's only 3 hours in common, you know, business hours in common with the East Coast, it's just so inconvenient that you have to put things off from one day to the next because you're waiting for them, or they're waiting for you to wake up. You know, if you get phone calls at 5 a.m, because it's their business hours, but not ours, that's pretty inconvenient for us. We get an extra hour of daylight in the morning, which really doesn't do us a whole lot of good at 3 a.m., but we can certainly use that hour in the evening at 9.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you very much. Next is Lynn Willis, Eagle River.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Lynn Willis. I'm from Eagle River, Alaska, and I'm here to testify in support of HB 176. Mr. Chairman, I thank you for holding this hearing. I would like to thank Representatives Salmon, Coring, Croft, and Gruenberg for introducing and sponsoring this bill. I would also like to thank my senator, Senator Dyson, for co-sponsoring the Senate version of this legislation, SB 120. I strongly support the repeal of daylight saving time in Alaska and support HB 176. For the third time in 6 years, repeal legislation has been introduced, and hopefully this issue, which impacts twice a year on every Alaskan, will have the full hearing and public debate it deserves. The other attempts to repeal DST were 1999 House Bill 4 and 2002 House Bill 409. Both bills died in committee. There has been legislative concurrence with effort to repeal. I have a letter from then Representative Ken Lancaster claiming that HB 409, which he sponsored, had the 26 votes necessary to be scheduled for a floor vote. HB 176 should become law for the following 5 reasons. First, a majority of Alaskans favor repeal. According to a statewide public opinion poll of 505 Alaskans conducted in April 2004 by Dittman Research, 58% of Alaskans favor repeal of daylight saving time. Only 37% favored continued use, and the remaining 5% had no opinion. The 37% minority needs to clearly state an overriding public need for the continued use of daylight saving time. Second, we don't need to change clocks. We live in the land of the midnight sun, with most of the state located in high northern latitudes where extremes in day length are part of life. In south central Alaska at this time of the year, we are gaining an hour of natural daylight about every 10 days. Third, most Alaskans already use daylight saving time year-round. With the exception of the far Aleutian Islands, since 1983, all of Alaska that lies west of the Yukon Territory has been on permanent daylight saving time. From April to October, use of daylight saving time adds an additional hour to the difference between our clocks and the position of the sun in the sky. Modifying time zones, coupled with the use of daylight saving time, has created a situation where during the period when daylight saving time is in use, the sun is highest in the sky in Fairbanks and Anchorage at 2 p.m. and Nome at 3 p.m. Fourth, we are not saving energy by using daylight saving time. I contacted the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, MSTAR Natural Gas, and my local utility, Matanuska Electric, and asked about energy savings and the use of daylight saving time. Each responded and informed me that they have no information that would support a claim of energy saving by use of daylight saving time. Fifth, Alaska should be able to be more than 1 hour away from Seattle or 4 hours away from New York for 6 months of the year. Visitors and those wishing to contact Alaska must deal with a time zone difference. Don't computers and other advances in communication technology allow individuals to communicate and conduct most commercial transactions regardless of time or location? Is any individual or group of Alaskans so incapable of coping with daylight saving time when it is in effect in the lower 48 that they require a state law forcing every Alaskan to support them for 6 months of the year? Aren't we considered to be part of the global economy? The two largest nations in Asia, Japan and China, do not practice daylight saving time. When we decrease our time difference to the lower 48, we increase the difference with Asia. Perhaps we can exploit our time difference to provide services not available in other zones. Other time zones. In conclusion, I urge you to support HB 176. I feel that daylight saving time is nothing but an unnecessary intrusion by state government into our lives. It is an intrusion with no clear or overriding public benefit. Please do the citizens of Alaska a favor and suspend the use of this public nuisance. Thank you for your time.
Any questions for Mr. Willis? Thank you very much, Mr. Willis. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? The voices of the committee. We're closed to public comment. We'll open it up to the committee. Representative Sisna. You're speechless?
I think that actually comes straight right to the point. I'm speechless. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Codd.
I've been on both sides of this issue, and I can appreciate not getting a phone call at 4 in the morning. Someone back east as a small businessman, I get them quite frequently, but whether it's 4 in the morning or 3 in the morning, it's still early. And since Mr. Lynn is my constituent, I'm going to make the motion to move it out of committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
I oppose. I guess we'll call for a vote. And I'll state my opposition as a small businessman in Alaska for almost 30 years. I lived on the phone, and the difference was definitely noticeable and had an impact. And I think it does on many small businesses, obviously, Representative Cotts. And for that reason, I will oppose it.
Representative Salmon.
Yes.
Representative Cott?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux?
Yes.
Representative Sisna?
Yes.
Representative Newman not present. Co-Chair Olson?
No.
Co-Chair Thomas not present. 5-1. Excuse me, 4-1.
Don't remove it. We need 5-1.
It moves.
No, it It's on its way.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I have a caucus at 9:30 that I'd like to... what time are we in session today?
We're in session at 10, and we had enough time to hear House Bill 28.
Okay.
You want to stick around for that one?
Well, I'll stick around for that one.
Mr. Berg, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We introduced this bill to the committee last week. I don't know if anybody wants a refresher on what the bill proposes to do, or if not, I'm here to answer any questions. And I'm not sure, there might be an amendment out there. I don't know whether that's being offered or not.
Any committee comments?
Mr. Chair, I see two amendments, and I just am wondering what the status is of those amendments.
We haven't voted on either one of them.
Oh, we did. No, we didn't. Oh, we didn't. Okay. I didn't remember.
Representative Salmon?
Yes, is one of those amendments mine, Mr. Chair?
I would say both of them were.
Well, I would like to withdraw those amendments, please.
Yeah, consider it done. Any other comments, or what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 28 from our committee with individual recommendations and fiscal note, thorough fiscal note so far.
Any opposition? Well, another one's out here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Adam.
Well, nothing's changed.
Well, I think we're losing our members left and right. Adjourned at 9:35.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.